I feel like playing hooky. That's all I'm telling you up front. Aloha and mahalo to all our brothers and sisters in Hawaii. Yo dudes on the West Coast. Hey yous guys on the East Coast. A nostalgic hey y'all to Dixie. A hearty boy howdy to all the lonesome cowgirls and cowboys of the Southwest and to all the middle Americans in between and all the way up to the nation's North Coast. Hi, guys. And of course, a reminder to the hostile invading alien armies hovering silently behind their cloaking devices just outside of Earth's atmospheres. Remember, eat the Canadians first. They are the tasty North Americans, not like us fatty Americans, not like the rest of us down here in the lower 48. No, the free range North Americans, eat the Canadians first and give the rest of us fair warning. And thank you, as always, is all the fun email we get on that subject and some stuff on the website. We'll get to that coming up in just a second. I do feel like playing hooky, though. Great weather tonight here in the Twin Cities where I live, and hopefully where you are too. And I'm jacked up on a little nap and a big cup of coffee. Got notice earlier today that for sure George was going to be taking the night off, and that's fortuitous as far as I'm concerned. I've been itching to be having a conversation about all of these security measures, and it's very frustrating for me when I can't find people who want to have the conversation with me. So I was kind of thinking, oh, this is such a coast-to-coast thing, and if I could just... And then George was, and I was like, oh, well, that's... Yeah, of course I'll do it. So open lines tonight, but don't be fooled. We will have some guests. In fact, Dr. Andrew Kolarik will join us later on this hour. We'll talk about some of the new data mining software and apparati being used at airports and other public places. More on that when we do some crypto news in just a second. And also next hour, I'll be the guest. I'm declaring that I'm the guest for the first couple hours. In fact, here's the story. Here's the play. We'll take Dr. Andrew Kolarik this hour, and then I want to pitch to you next hour some things that I get and things that I don't get out of these last 48 hours. And I would love to hear how you respond to them. So we'll do like 2 hours of those calls. Maybe the last hour we'll just do, you know, truly open lines where we'll just take it anywhere you want to go. And we'll make a point of not talking about security in the last hour. But for the first bit, bear with me, because I've been struggling with this and all of the announcements that are made that seem to contradict each other or don't follow any logical line whatsoever from what we hear originally on Thursday morning about the terrorist attack that was thwarted in London. And you got to love that word thwart. Is it used like every other sentence in the last 48 hours? And it doesn't come up that often. You don't hear thwart except for something like this. And suddenly, you know, you can't get enough of the word. But that's where I want to go with that for a while. I want to lay it out for you. I think there are things that have been said that were dispensed with a kind of cavalier attitude that said, nobody's really paying that much attention. Everybody just wants to feel like everything's okay. And here's all you have to do to be safe is throw away your hand lotion and everything will be all right. I feel like there's a much darker kind of movement behind that. And I'm not exactly sure what that means or what I mean by it. But that's why I want to get to the list of what I get and what I don't get, and then see whether or not you can fill in some of those blanks. Fair enough? That'll be next hour when we do some open lines, because I think a lot of things have been said, which the people saying them hope most Americans won't care about. And they say them with that presumption that most Americans won't question it. But then again, most Americans don't listen to Coast AM, in for George Noory tonight. This is Ian Punnett. Again, Dr. Andrew Kolarik coming up this hour, and then we'll do some open lines next hour. But I want to stay very much on topic of security for the first couple of hours and then see where the show gets us. Or maybe we'll run out of gas early on that. But let me run by some of the things that have been bugging me about this all of these announcements. I've been taking notes. How about you? In crypto news tonight, first we just have to lead off by saying great news. Let's hope it sticks. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has accepted an emerging Mideast ceasefire deal and informed the United States of his decision. According to the Associated Press, Olmert will recommend that his government approve the deal in its meeting on Sunday on condition of anonymity, because they were not authorized to brief journalists on the internal discussion. These officials said that it looks like a done deal. Cross your fingers or say a prayer. And remember to throw into those prayers the people who are in pain throughout the world and throughout the audience tonight. While the process isn't perfect, scanning machines do exist that can detect liquid explosives. This is an explosive story in its own right from the AP, like the ones reportedly at the heart of the terrorist plot broken up this week. But don't expect the airport to use these machines anytime soon. They say cost and logistical issues present challenges for these devices. These liquid explosive detectors are part of something that's done at Rapiscan Systems. Rapiscan is developing four kinds of devices, some based on technologies more than 10 years old, that can detect liquid or gel-based explosives. Two that would work on carry-on handbags already have been tested by the TSA and, quote, could be deployed this afternoon, said the company's vice president for government affairs. But none are being used in the United States. So they have the technology. They know where it is. They could implement it immediately. They're just choosing not to. Some are in place overseas, however. One big reason is that it's not easy to integrate the explosive detecting machines, some of which can cost $250,000, and get them into existing security checkpoints. Some say because each briefcase, purse, or other carry-on bag has to be put in a special drawer for analysis, using the detectors could significantly bog down passenger screening. Homeland Security analyst Brian Ruttenberg of Morgan Keegan Company also points out that the technology still produces a relatively high number of false alarms. Yeah, well, thank God we never have to worry about that at airports, right? For those reasons, and because there still has not been a successful attack using liquid explosives, the TSA won't be pressed to overhaul the current screening regimen. Let me repeat that. Because there has not yet been a successful attack using liquid explosives, they will not overhaul the current screening regimen. As soon as there has been a successful liquid explosive attack, they'll get right on it. The Department of Homeland Security will deploy additional computerized methods of pinpointing threats in airports in response to the newly uncovered plot to blow up aircraft flying from London to the U.S., according to Michael Chertoff. The Immigration and Customs Enforcement will be increasing enforcement of efforts in the international arrival areas, including the use of advanced targeting tools. Some special response teams, including baggage and aircraft search teams, baggage X-ray equipment, specially trained canine units, and explosive detective technology, Chertoff told reporters during a press conference yesterday morning. Yeah, is it just me? I mean, am I the only one who thinks that Michael Chertoff, God bless him, I know he's got a hard job, and I'm not saying he's an evil guy, but does he ever look like Skeletor to you when he stands up there? It's like Skeletor in a suit. I'm sure that's very mean. I'm sorry. Now, none of the officials elaborated on what kind of advanced targeting tools DHS would begin using in airports, but previously announced research projects in the area include special systems that can detect individuals who, quote, display suspicious behavior. So they're not talking about technology to detect liquid explosives, but the advanced targeting tools generally is understood to cover data mining methods that can extract useful patterns from huge heaps of information, such as the data already gathered about terrorists and their methods. Law enforcement and counterterrorism officials have studied a range of methods for pinpointing individually known terrorists in a crowd. Individually known terrorists in a crowd, such as gait analysis that distinguishes people by the way they walk. The field includes a wide range of biometric identifiers that can either serve to match individuals in crowds to known threats or to finger previously unknown terrorists from a distance. They can finger them from a distance using this technology. One senior official cited body odor as one of the more recent biometric identifiers. Body odor. We will be talking about this with Dr. Andrew Kolarik later on this hour, that I promise. All right, so the low frequency seismic rumblings of volcanoes are being transformed into delicate musical scores in an effort to predict when they will erupt. That according to a story on coasttocoastam.com tonight. Researchers in Italy have already created a concerto from the underground movements of Mount Etna on Sicily. They are now creating melodies from Ecuador's recently erupted volcano by correlating the music with the precise stages of volcanic activity on both volcanoes. The team hope to learn the signature tune of an imminent eruption. I think I could save them a lot of time on that. I don't know about you. I think it's a fascinating idea. It's a great crypto news story. Thank you, everybody at coasttocoastam.com for putting all these great stories online every day. But I think they're missing something here. We already know this. If you want the melody that these volcanoes make just before the explosion, I'm pretty sure you could say it's going to sound a lot like Mr. Roboto by Styx, which also blew. A mysterious contagious cancer, which plagues dogs throughout the world, may be the only first truly transmittable cancer known. It's a sad story. It's fascinating, though. The cancer cells themselves move directly from dog to dog, acting parasitically on each infected animal. The canine transmissible venereal tumor spreads between dogs through sex or other forms of contact, such as licking and biting. The same cancer appears to infect dogs throughout the world and probably originated from a cancer in a single wolf or a dog closely related to a wolf that lived between 250 and 1,000 years ago, the researchers say. I don't know quite how they can make that claim, but I think that's an amazing story. And we have to find a cure for this contagious cancer, this mysterious contagious cancer, before it affects that little dog named Nori that's been on the coasttocoastam.com website. Have you seen that picture? Go there tonight and just click on the listener emails and look at the dog named Nori. What can we do to save Nori's life and all the dogs out there? Scientists say the oxygen-starved dead zone along the Pacific coast that is causing massive crab and fish die-offs is worse than originally thought. Scientists say weather, not pollution, appears to be the culprit. No relief is in sight. However, some say there is no immediate sign yet of long-term damage to the crab fishery, crab die-offs going on there. No truth to the rumor, too, that just back from their honeymoon, Kid Rock and Pamela Anderson went immediately and took a dip in there. James the Fourth, King James the Fourth, held his alchemist in such high esteem that he appears to have treated him with extraordinary leniency. This is a story that's also at coasttocoastam.com. He appointed his alchemist, a guy named Damien, to the position of an abbot, and amongst other items listed as being bought for the alchemist in the historical record were plenty of aqua vitae, right? The water of life, or whiskey. We know that for alchemists, whiskey represented a sort of holy grail, the mixture of two elements, fire and water. Whether Damien used the whiskey purely for research is open to speculation. However, he certainly ordered plenty of it. That according to this very cool story. By 1507, Damien had found a new project when he became obsessed with the notion of mechanical flight. True to the spirit of a quester of the time, he concluded that the only way to test out the theory was by experimentation. So, on the 27th of September, 1507, the alchemist prepared to fly. Damien based his design around bird flight and fashioned a pair of wings. Then taking a great leap of faith, he threw himself from the top of Stirling Castle. He broke his thigh bone. He lived, but he busted a leg. An interesting side note to the life of John Damien is the question of whether the inspiration for flight came from his Italian compatriot, also an experimenter and an alchemist, Leonardo da Vinci himself, who was writing extensively about flight at the time. That was in 1502 when Damien was flying around Europe, if you will, learning things from other alchemists. We don't know that for sure, but it sure makes an interesting story. The first serious flying experiment ever made in Scotland, if not indeed in the whole history of experimental flight. And the 500th anniversary for that is coming up on the 27th of September next year. And I think we have to be prepared for that. First of all, I think it marks several milestones, not just the first experimental flight very likely ever made. We have no record of Leonardo da Vinci, for example, trying any of his devices. But we have this guy trying this one. And so it makes you wonder, though, is it also the 500th anniversary of a guy getting drunk and thinking he can fly? Is that the first time that ever happened? Maybe the first on record of the first time somebody ever got, you know, hooted up on whiskey and then decided to jump. But I don't. I think it gives us a little time to work on the appropriate ceremony and how to commemorate it. Hi, Ian. In the Ian mail tonight, I get this letter from Lorenzo about tomorrow night's show on Coast to Coast Live. I'll be hosting that show prior to Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on many of the stations that are hearing this program. If you don't get it, contact your local program director and let them know that you're interested in hearing Coast to Coast Live. And tomorrow night, we're doing the history of the Necronomicon. The Necronomicon. Simon will be our guest. Lorenzo writes, regarding your guest presenting the so-called Necronomicon, it irks me when people, like your soon-to-be guest, present the Necronomicon as a factual physical codex or manuscript. There never was such a thing in history. No reference to the Necronomicon precedes H.P. Lovecraft's use of it in his stories. Lovecraft invented the fictional grimoire as a storytelling device to give his tales a feel of authenticity and depth, and often mentioned it during the course of a tale by grouping it with actual historical books, which helped sustain the illusion. I found that many people who believe in its existence do so out of ignorance, but nevertheless defend the belief as fervently as any religiously minded person might defend their own faith. I would consider it a public service if you pressed your guest for an actual reference or document that mentions the Necronomicon by name, one that predates Lovecraft, Lorenzo. Well, that is going to be the basis of the whole show tomorrow night on Coast to Coast Live. Simon is the one that published the first popularly available version, and I stress that word, of the Necronomicon. He was assailed for being a fraud and that the book itself was a fabrication and that H.P. Lovecraft, the novelist, had invented the Necronomicon for the purposes of his fiction, but that it never existed. People wanted it, but it never existed. And that they were, you know, concocting this this fiction in order to satisfy a need in the market to have a Necronomicon, which translates roughly to a book of the dead or dead names or a law of the dead. So we'll talk about that coming up tomorrow night, and we'll let him defend it. He believes he has the proof for it, and he would say to what Lorenzo says is that there was never a mention of the Dead Sea Scrolls before the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered. So hang in there, and we'll get to that conversation coming up tomorrow night. By the way, if you go to jazzpax.com, JASPAX.com/Antichrist, and type in my name, you'll discover that, in fact, I am the Antichrist, apparently. Jazzpax, JASPAX.com/Antichrist. Find out if you're the Antichrist, too. The TSA missed a way of keeping liquids on flights, writes Clay in Mayretta, Georgia. They need to empty all the bladders first if they're going to get rid of all the liquids on flights. I want to get back to that thought coming up next hour, and don't think that's so crazy. And weirdest or coolest place to listen to Coast to Coast, a side of the mountain in the interior of British Columbia in the middle of the night of August with a meteor shower going on, which is going on right now. So hi to all the tasty Canadians that are listening to that. By the way, go to the website. You see that great posters, Eat More Tasties. You can blow that up and print it. And go take a look at the picture of the dog named Nori, too, as one coast-to-coast email wag asked, Ian, I could swear that dog has your eyes. I deny everything. Except that we've got Dr. Andrew Kalera coming up next, and then open lines on Coast to Coast AM, in for George Norrie. This is Ian Punnett. And in fact, you don't hear a lot of things on other radio shows that you hear on Coast to Coast AM. We'll maintain that tradition. What I get and what I don't get about the last 48 hours of headlines about these terrorist plots, we'll see where you are with all of this and how you have been hearing all of these developments and all of the things that are going to change short-term, long-term. And what about all this data mining that's going to be going on in the name of safety, right? I mean, we all want to be safe, but what's too much? And what's kind of been in the hip pockets of security experts that they've been dying to try out? Looking for just the right excuse to say, well, this is what we need. Here's the tonic. And we'll ask Dr. Andrew Kalerick about what's waiting there in the storage rooms at the airports and other public facilities next on Coast to Coast AM. In for George, this is Ian Punnett. Dr. Andrew Kolarek joins us here in the first hour before we get to some open line calls coming up. And again, I think we'll stick with the focus of security for a little while before we branch off and let you take us anywhere you want to go on Coast to Coast AM. And I would go through the whole bio of Dr. Andrew Kolarek, but I've read it so many times I'm bored with it. So if you want to go read it, it's online. Go read it there. Hey, Andrew.
How you doing, Ian?
Couldn't be better. So, and let me say hi, a hearty hello to your father, too, who may be listening tonight. So let me throw this out here, too. There are things about the whole last 48 hours that just kind of don't add up to me. And in my own way, I'll get to that coming up. However, for you, I think this is as a data mining expert. What do you hear out of all of these news stories about increased scrutiny at airports and some of these new measures they're going to be taking?
Well, a lot of the measures are they're geared to make us feel safer, not necessarily make us safer.
Right.
They're also geared to be politically correct. I mean, we need to inspect, the diapers of babies because there might be something in there. Although I don't recall any, elderly women with children taking out airliners.
Or threatening to.
Or threatening to.
Right, or although, a couple of them that maybe exist. The FBI isn't tracking an underground network of grandmas.
Exactly.
Right.
And so a lot of these things, and I have to say that people are being very agreeable with all of these changes in policy and procedure. Initially, I can see if you shock people, they'll be disgruntled that they have to throw away their products. But on the second day of all of this, the lines were smooth, people adjusted, they packed differently, so forth. You're going to see some of these measures stay with us for many years to come.
Or will they? And that's a debate I was catching from some flight attendants that had emailed me that they had said, no, this is just going to be around for a little while. This is just a brief thing, that this isn't going to be long term. And that even the people within the airline industry, they don't really have any idea. how long this is going to go on or what this is all about. And I'll get back to the thing about the food here in just a second, but I want to back up just a bit when you were talking about the grandmas and the politically correct, because what are you trying to say by that? That they have to go through the baby's diapers and the grandmas in order to be able to go after the people that they really suspect. They just don't want to come out and say who they really suspect.
Well, you know, Thomas Friedman did an interview where he talked with some Middle Eastern folks, and they said, why are you targeting our particular segment? And he said, because it wasn't people from Norway or Sweden who committed the 9/11 attacks. And it's not those folks that are doing all these other attacks around the world for the last 15, almost 20 years.
All right, no, that's great. So now we all, and there's a part of that which we can all have sort of one of those, well, duh moments with that. But how does the technology interface with that? I mean, how does the technology get into maintaining a stance of political correctness? If they're data mining in airports, and you have to probably explain a little bit about what you're talking about there, how do they do that in a way using the technology that also remains politically incorrect at the, you know, detriment of its efficacy?
Well, what they are attempting to do to maintain what they call balance is they're going to have records of transactions, flights, reservations. There are commercial data brokers out there that have all kinds of our personal information put into portfolios. They're going to interface with those records. And then they have their own top secret and secret databases on suspected terrorists or associations of terrorists or places of worship that may or may not have links or had members go through them that had links, et cetera, et cetera. Also, they couple that with overseas intelligence and those databases. So what they're basically doing is taking all these disparate databases of all this data of transactions and then linking them.
Okay, well, all right. Now let's talk about some of the new technology that I mentioned earlier in this hour, this idea of the gait analyzer, something that would analyze how somebody is walking.
Well, you know, biometrics is an emerging field, and in certain applications, it works fine for things like thumbprint and, you know, retina scans and the things we see in a lot of Hollywood movies.
Or even on a new, like, laptop computer I saw advertising for kids back to school, where it needs a fingerprint in order to activate it.
Right.
That, biometrics making it all the way down to a $699 laptop computer.
Exactly. And in fact, you're going to see child-proofing based on somebody's thumbprint. Okay.
Okay.
So if the child, you know, if you have different children, they might scan their thumb, and that allows them certain access rights on, say, the internet.
Right. Or even handguns in the home and other things which people are talking about biometrics on.
Right. And again, a lot of you know, movies and television drive this technology. Now, this gait analysis.
Yeah, what does this mean?
Well, what it means is if I just got off of a flight from London, which is 9 or 10 hours, and I didn't sit very well, and now I'm walking funny, I might get myself screened for extra scrutiny.
Now,
if I match up with somebody else's gait, okay, or if, you know, there was a mention of body odor detection. Well, when you're aggressive, when you're ready to do something, you generate more testosterone and other, you know, endorphins and pheromones and so forth. Well, at the same time, if the guy inspecting you has upset you, or the guy behind you upset you on the whole flight, now you come off the plane and you might set off these detectors.
All right, but before we talk about how it can't work or what the problems are, and you take away all the food off the flights, and you're going to have more crying babies, and you're going to have more people getting off the flights who didn't sleep well or are walking funny or smell bad or are angrier. But, I mean, so the theory here, though, is somehow they'll be able to use these biometric devices to measure the odor of somebody and be more inclined to detect that they are about to commit a crime based on their odor.
Exactly.
Okay. And or could it also be we're talking about some hygienic practices which are cultural? Could we be – is that the subtext of this, that they'll be able to – they're looking for people who come from nations or religious practices that will be less likely to wear deodorant or to bathe like Westerners? I mean, is that part of this?
Well, I can't say that that's part of it, but the same technology that lets you determine certain pH levels and odors and so forth can be applied to whatever profile you establish. Now, if you have those detectors, then you don't really have to disclose what your profile is.
Okay. So
where again, if you say, I only want those guys who are wearing turbans and long hair on the face. Well, now, most people would think that's harassment and would object to it. They have to commit a crime before they are suspected of doing one. But if you automate this process, if you randomize, certain inspections and so forth, well, then you eliminate the political correctness or the template that people can then scrutinize the scrutinizers.
Well, and I know people who are from the Middle East, and life isn't good for them flying between, destinations or on business appointments. It's tough. And they do get looks askew even when they are dressed in traditional, American Western business wear. And they'll still get people looking at their briefcase when they put it underneath the seat in front of them. And so, and I understand that that's not easy, and that gets on their nerves, and they don't feel like they've done anything wrong. So why should they have to suffer for the sins of others? But the same thing's going to be said then for people who just walk funny to begin with, right? I mean, if we're really going to be analyzing people's gaits, then somebody who might have a natural problem with a hip or some sort of congenital defect or something, the next thing they're going to get profiled then too.
Well, when technology's not perfect, and for some reason our society has decided the solution to everything is more technology. And the fact of the matter is, if you and I see something out of the ordinary, we're better than any machine. And if we're smart, we would then report what's out of the ordinary.
But that would force them to tell us what we're supposed to be looking for. And they don't like to do that because information is power. And so I have some questions about that coming up at the top of the next hour on that very same idea. Tell us these things. Share that information with us. Don't treat us like children, and good things can happen. But that I think that that's part of the idea of that they feel like some big amorphic they. But I mean, there are people who are in power on this, and they don't want to share that information.
Well, there's a basic law about power. And when you centralize and concentrate power, then you disempower all the other people in a structure.
Right.
You have to distribute power throughout a structure to allow it to work properly. And by limiting, America has a very interesting system, which is radically different than everywhere else. We're a bottom-up society. Our government doesn't own us. We're not a constitutional monarchy. We empower our government to do certain tasks. And when you reverse that, then you have what's outside our borders. And we now see an emergence of the government needs to take more power from us so that they can do things.
And that power comes in the form of mining more data on us, knowing more. And going back to what you were saying before, more data doesn't necessarily translate to more or better analysis.
No,
it just means more data.
It does, however, translate to more enforcement power by the state. The reason that we have due process is, I mean, take a look at all the laws. We have so many laws on the books. If you could have full access to somebody's records, okay, for the last, say, 7 years, I'm sure you can find they did something wrong. We're human. We make mistakes. We have other people do things for us, such as taxes. We don't always fully come to a stop at a stop sign.
Yeah, and as I've always said, if you're not breaking at least one law in Alabama, chances are you're not doing sex right.
Well, I don't know about that, but
check me on that. Check me on that. I bet you.
Well, we'll check the facts.
The sex isn't any good unless you're breaking at least one law in Alabama. I believe that would stand up to an investigation.
Could be. But the whole point here is very simply: the more data we give the government, or the more data they acquire on us, the more likely they can find something wrong with us. So that has to be moderated with civilian oversight.
But that's where it gets into that sticky area, because the gathering of this data, right? I mean, the data mining, they're talking about these machines they're talking about that can analyze how people are going to walk or how people smell. It seems to me like some of this stuff, they're just going to gather it, and then they don't even know what they're going to do with it yet. I mean, they have the technology to gather it, but they're not even exactly sure what it means once they have that information.
But they will figure out what to do with it later.
Okay,
rest assured.
That's comforting.
They will figure out what to do with it later, especially when this whole terrorism thing has diminished. You will have an infrastructure of people who will need to self-justify their existence.
And all of the data that they've been acquiring in the meantime.
Yes.
All right. Now, so back to then to the subject of other things, more mainstream things in data mining. Have you been noticing? I mean, my mind has been on all of the airport stuff, but you've been watching a lot of the home computer and just kind of standard data collection. Anything changed in the last 48 hours? Have you been hearing rumblings of anything that's supposed to make us safer?
Well, the Department of Homeland Security is moving forward with a plan to put radio frequency chips of our passport information directly into new passports that are issued. So what this allows them to do is, instead of taking the passport and swiping it and looking and scanning and so forth, all they have to do is run it next to a receiver, and the chip will transfer the data. Now, the problem is radio frequency doesn't care who the receiver is. So I could have a scanner in my pocket, and I could gather, say, 3 or 4 other people's passport information that I'm in line with.
Right.
Same way as a credit card can be scanned for all of its information by simply moving it near the recorder, say, in your front pants pocket. It's the same approach, only the radio frequency has a greater range.
Right, and you can, and if you were a terrorist and you were looking for the Americans on a plane, you could use one of those devices and not even have to worry so much about collecting passports or having people turn them over or whatever. You'd be able to tell.
You could walk down the aisle and effectively gather all the personal information of everybody on the plane, dates of birth, full names, whatever is on your passport, you would be able to collect.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the setup to where we're going with this, which is the first couple hours here of Open Lines just focused on security and some of these weird headlines that have come out where it seems like, and we have 30 seconds for you to comment on this, it seems like some of the introduction, some of the toe testing that's going on in this in the water is been things that have been in the pipe for a long time. They've just been waiting for a chance to bring it out. Would you agree with that?
I believe that there are whole organizations that spend the last 5 years developing technologies and approaches, and when a crisis happens, that's when the funding will occur. That's when the motivation and incentive gets kicked in, and they get implemented.
What I get and what I don't get coming up next, and we'll go to your calls on Coast to Coast AM in for George. This is Ian Punnett.